Okay, so not Missouri, Kazakhstan. I get them.
Yeah, not in Kazakhstan.
I get them confused. There's a village called Missouri.
And I'm
excellent.
Not Denmark, Ohio, so.
Right.
How do we start? This is the question at the beginning of every episode.
Do you don't have like a theme song or anything?
You may have heard it a few times. All right, that's the beginning. Why the hell not, everybody? This is Game of Owns. We're all here today.
We have a
all
theme
of us.
Song.
Will it be playing under as we talk right now?
Right now. Like it's fading as you listen
away.
Right now.
Just slightly out of our reach.
That's
it's subtextual.
You guys may be wondering who this other baritone voice is joining us. It's not Selena's brother. It is Brian Cogman.
Yay!
Brian Cogman playing Selena's brother.
That's an interesting twist.
Whose name is Nikolai? That's another twist for you. Yeah,
he's Danish.
Selena,
you
got all the attention as a child. And I resent you.
I can see the plot building already.
Everyone said, why can't you be more like Selena? And I just would go into my room.
It's like you're a writer or something.
You're finally partying with the cool kids. Congratulations.
Finally, you let me be on your podcast.
Brian's been asking us to join the show for several months now, and we needed to find a reason to allow him, and why the hell not? The latest episode of Thrones just came out on Sunday night. It's now Thursday. You're listening on Friday. And Ryan did write this episode.
Yes.
So we guess
Ryan wrote it? I think Brian wrote. Did you? I think you said Ryan.
See, that's the Skype malfunction.
Oh, that's the Skype. Okay.
They'll play back and listen.
For a second, I thought you found out my secret that I keep a real writer named Ryan locked in the closet.
Ryan comes
writes,
in the closet.
He writes everything. My twin, my talented twin. Let me out. I'm hungry. Shut up.
He's the
Shut
one
up.
On
Write that
camera
monologue.
Right now.
Write that Jamie monologue. No dinner for you tonight. Yes. Hi. Yes. It's thank you for having me on Game of Owns.
That's the name.
I know.
One syllable away from the actual thing.
Right. No, it's clever.
Plus, it fits because on the show, we're watching it. You know, we're coming along and everybody owns each other. There are several. I don't know if we ever counted how many owns there were in an episode. Slightly subjective. But people own other people. This is what happens on the show.
Yeah, they buy them like slaves.
Yeah, I was going to say both literally and figuratively. Yes, it's status is certainly a big part of the show, and who's on top and who's on bottom, and that often changes
depending
throughout
on
the
where
scene.
They are in the
also,
scene.
Yes.
Both physically and emotionally.
Hanging out in Littlefinger's place.
It's true.
It mixes up a little
it's
bit.
It's true. It's true.
George R. R. Martin is compiling a list of Tyrion's best wits and humor.
Owns.
And I think
owns.
This is the owns. Basically a book of Tyrion's owns. Yeah. And this is the best because I just want to buy it and live by it, you know?
I'm looking at it right. Game of Thrones book, Tyrion Lannister, coming this The wit and wisdom of Tyrion Lannister, full of clever and naughty quips from the brilliant but filthy dwarf. Oh, that's fun.
Wow.
Well,
can you just see yourself like
that's exciting.
Asking, you know, the big questions in life, going, what would Tyrion Lannister do?
Well,
and
now
turn
you
to
can.
A page, and then he'll just tell you, like,
oh,
let
is...
me give you some advice, bastard, he'll say. And
exactly.
then there you have it.
And I don't recommend doing that in conversation, by the way. Once or twice I've
WWTLD.
Yeah, that's so fun. Yes. I hadn't seen that. You guys, that's cool. I'll you know, maybe he'll sign one for me.
Maybe.
And maybe.
Pull a few
He's going to hear you on Goo. So.
He will, if nothing else. That's great.
We are super excited to have you here, man, because
nice.
You do a lot of work that helps enable what we do with some of our work.
Oh,
probably why he does it, too, don't you think?
So thank you for that.
In a way, yes. Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words, and I'm glad that anyone likes our show. I remember when we first started this crazy thing, and it was the three, me and David and Dan in a room, plotting out the first season before we even shot the pilot. And, you know, of course the books had a very loyal cult following, but it remained to be seen whether or not it would appeal to a wider audience. So the fact that it's caught on the way it has is really gratifying and very exciting.
The ratings this season that I've been seeing just through the post when it's coming, it's just it's incredible to see this.
No, we smashed all records last week. So we'll see if, of course, the week after mine airs, they'll dip or something, and I'll get all the.
You can blame Ryan.
I didn't have I didn't have dragons killing slavers at the end of my episode. So
I know.
But it's so exciting. I mean, you know, it's a testament to George's, you know, story that it appeals to people who would normally never even, you know, approach something with the word Thrones in the title, you know, anything that implies genre or fantasy or whatever. So, you know, I'm really happy that people from all walks of life and all ages are fans and come up to me. And,
I love your brother, Ryan.
Well, they see, exactly. They say your brother, Ryan's amazing. Now they see me in coffee shops, like working on the show with like, I'll have a paperback of Storm of Swords or whatever out and they'll just strike up a conversation, you know, going, oh, have you read that? Did you watch the show? And it's,
and, no, awesome. I haven't.
And like, no, like, no, please tell me about it.
I know. I just have this on my table to pick up girls.
I hear it's not like the book at all. That's what I heard.
They say, they butchered it. Do you watch that show? Oh, but no, but it's true. All kinds of people though will want to strike up the conversation just by seeing a copy of the book on a table I'm working. You know what I mean? So it really goes to show how people, all kinds of people are embracing it. It's great.
I'm happy because as a big fan of the fantasy genre since I was a little kid, it's this show has done a great job making so much of this mainstream.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
And that's cool because it's a little bit of, you know, verification, like, hey, swords and shields are pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the trick. The trick is, you know, it's a balancing act of satisfying the fans of the books and the fans of the genre, but also making it palatable to everybody. And, you know, it's not easy and it's, you know, we try our best to have a little bit of something for everyone, but yeah, the goal was for it to be, you know, enjoyed by diehard fans and by newbies alike. So
HBO does a really good job at picking the right people because with Sopranos they made the mafia cool, and so
we love that. The Godfather
had tried to, you know, had done its part there too. But
oh yeah,
but yeah, no, I mean it's fun. They take these genres and sort of turn them on their heads, whether or not, you know, whether it's the Western with Deadwood or I mean The Wire is so much more than a cop show, but at the beginning it was sort of a riff on the typical cop show, and then it of course became so much more. But yeah, I think that's that was the idea, was that you would take this genre that people have certain, you know, certain ideas about and present it in a very different way.
Hey, Selena, you know what I'm thinking of right now?
What are you thinking of?
Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
What do you think, Brian?
I love Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Of course. Isn't
yes.
that like basically Game of Thrones in space?
I mean, that's to a degree, theory. Yeah. I mean, it's very, it's got the same kind of political machinations, characters that exist in sort of a state of gray, if you will. Meditations on religion, certainly in the latter part of the series. Yeah, absolutely. It's been a while since, actually, I probably ought to do a rewatch of that. I haven't seen it in a while since I initially watched it, but yeah, I love that show. I love Battlestar Galactica.
It's like you can, the shows you can watch and you can, I mean, this is the best sci-fi, it's the stuff you can watch it and then you can apply that to the real world. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
oh, absolutely. No, it was, and you know, when Battlestar was on was right when we were in the thick of the Iraq war and the renditions and, you know, well, it's kind of war on terror mania that was happening. And it definitely spoke to that. I love that
also
show.
Also Cylons. They're dangerous.
Well, yeah. And
raise awareness.
And they have a plan. Right?
They always have had a plan.
Although by the end, I wasn't quite sure what that plan was, but it's okay. I love that show.
It was cool.
I love that show. And it was a phenomenal cast as well. But yeah, that show, The Wire, is definitely a template in some ways in terms of, you know, The Wire had a bunch of very specific worlds kind of intersecting, you know, which is what our show does. And lots of different plot lines that are in the air that affect one another without, you know, each plot line necessarily knowing it, or each character necessarily knowing it. So that's sort of a subconscious model for our show.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Lost affected the show at all? Or because
I'm not sure if David and Dan watched Lost or not. I mean, I certainly did. I don't know. It's definitely in the fact that it had to service a huge cast of main characters. There was definitely something to be looked at there. I'm not sure. I haven't thought about it consciously, but it has to. Any show that you watch has to sort of subconsciously.
Sure.
I mean, evidently Disney musicals inspired me when I when I wrote this.
Have you seen those graphics of Daenerys and the dragons Disneyfied?
I did, and I saw that great.
It's your fault, Brian.
I know. I should just go for it. No, I saw this great fan video too. That one of Danny singing some song about like across the sea. I mean, they went all out. It was really impressive. I mean,
that's in 15 years when Disney buys the franchise.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
That's new episode every week.
Yeah. Right. Right. Oh my God. That's funny. It's great. And then Jorah comes in and he's like singing his own song about how he loves. Oh, it's great.
Khaleesi.
It's great. Yeah.
No, when I visit home, my grandmother shouts Khaleesi randomly from the kitchen.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
From watching the show. That's
oh, good.
Crazy.
So it wasn't something she did prior, because that then I would.
We all thought she was crazy. Then Game of Thrones came on, and it turns out that she was actually speaking.
Yeah, she was channeling something.
Like, you're onto something here.
No, but like again, it's like it's just great. It's just neat. It tickles me that anyone even knows enough about our show to then spoof it. I mean, that just makes me very happy.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Or to make a podcast that you're sitting on right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Strange. I mean,
you guys sit around just talking about this show. Like, what's up with that?
We have no lives.
Let's find out.
That's all we do.
I'll tell you everything. I, you know, who's on the Iron Throne.
Good. Well,
I
have a Micah has a big question.
Who is Jon Snow's mother?
Oh, Jon Snow's mother. Tell him. Jon Snow's mother...
As a woman.
Is not a woman. No, I that's the twist. No, I can't tell you. I can't
tell you.
Tried
to plan this joke.
I do know the answer. I can't tell you.
Ooh. Oh, wow. That's great enough for me. I'm just...
Oh, yeah. No,
I don't actually want to know.
A lot.
So
no,
Selena's just relieved that there is an answer. But here I am thinking that it's probably Ygritte's mom. Or somebody.
Oh, oh no. God.
That would be funny. No, I can't comment on any of that.
Don't rule it out.
I won't rule it out. There are a few things that David and Dan, George entrusted David and Dan with a few things at the very beginning that they needed to know. And then recently David, Dan and I visited George at his home in Santa Fe and talked about the future of the whole saga and where various storylines and characters were going, and because we're at the point now where we kind of need to know, what we're laying the groundwork for. So, I do know a lot. I hope I didn't even write any of it down or type any of it. I was paranoid that you know.
Did you want to know it though? I mean, as a fan, or would you rather read it on your own?
You know, that's speaks to a larger sort of. I mean, I'm not going to call it a problem because I'm fine with how my life has turned out, but I can't really enjoy it as a fan anymore. I mean, Dance with Dragons was the first of the books that I read once I was a writer on the show. And while I of course loved it, I couldn't love it the way I loved the other ones because the whole time I was in a way, you know, I was adapting it in my head or thinking about what it would mean for the show in my head. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's been lost for me a little bit. So yeah, I mean, in a way I wish I could have just sat and read the books and found out everything that way, but I'll take this.
The alternative's not too bad.
The alternative's not too bad.
Doing this show though, I mean, it must be great. The more you guys know, the more comfortable you must feel telling the story because there are so many storylines going off in all these millions of different directions that just being able to sort of like throw these threads out and then knowing where they all come back together.
I mean, it gives us a huge advantage. I mean, absolutely. That that we have the books to work off of, and B, that we know that there is an end game that this stuff is going somewhere.
That's nice for all of us to know.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many serialized shows and, you know, I've worked in television. The nature of it is usually that you just make it up as you go along because you have to. It's absurd to think that somebody should map out 6 seasons or 10 seasons of a TV show first, and then that's not how it works. Some showrunners might have a vague idea of where it's going, but certainly not to the detail that we do because we have George, we have the books, and we have George. You know, so that's great, and it lets us, you know, it saves time. You're not having to just sit there and you know, spitball a bunch of. I mean, we do to a degree. I mean, there are some new storylines of the show or storylines that have taken their own form for various reasons, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's following the framework that George has set out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you actually about that. Knowing these things about the ending, does that in a way give you more freedom to deviate more from book canon because you know how to come back on track if you need to?
Well, you know, one example is there are characters that we couldn't introduce earlier that we knew we could bring in later. And we knew what the framework of the story was, so we knew where we would be able to plug them in. An example is the Reeds. You know, Jojen and Mira Reed in the books appear in Clash of Kings. And for the first couple of seasons of our show, you know, I mean, we have the biggest cast on TV, maybe the biggest regular cast in TV history, if not the biggest. We simply couldn't have all the characters that are in books 1 and 2 in our show. The budget would not have allowed it. So some sacrifices had to be made. And in the case of the Reeds, it was a question of, well, we could remove them here and still tell the story of Clash of Kings. And there's a way to bring them back in later because we know what, you know, we know what's happening later. And so, so that's what we did, you know, and it's different. It's a different introduction to the Reeds, but the essentials are still there. Same with the Tullys, you know, Catelyn's family, who you meet in book one. You meet the Blackfish and Edmure in the first book.
I can't wait for them, more of them in season three.
Yeah, they're great. And it was great to be able to finally get to them. And it was never a matter of, oh, let's just cut. You know, we even had the Blackfish. We had the Blackfish in our original drafts of season one. And we just realized, well, if we need to thin out the cast, this the function of the Blackfish in the first book could be filled by Sir Roderick, who we already had. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff that you sort of have to deal with. And it ended up being a very fun way to introduce them. I mean, we were able to introduce them through that funeral scene. It's a great character moment for certainly for Edmure, and even more fun to make it his first moment, because it's one of those great kind of dialogue-less moments that tells you everything you need to know. You know,
I think it did a lot for archery as well. You know,
yeah,
practice makes perfect.
Certainly for,
it was like
for
the anti-Katniss.
Right. Yeah,
Bronn started it last season.
Yeah, Bronn's a better shot than
what a shot. Yeah. Come on, Bronn Favre, just killing it.
Bronn's kind of an incredible shot. I'm not sure anyone could really make that shot, but you know, it's a TV show.
What?
Yeah, sorry, it is a TV show, you guys.
It's not real.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Oh, you know. This is going to be
and
a problem.
Well,
who was fixing your
time?
House then, Micah?
Well, I mean, you know, someone was getting on me saying, you know, there's no way those babies could have been preserved in those jars until the 19th century. And I wanted to be, and I wanted to say, what century? This isn't a real world.
People need to
was
relax.
Back when winters last for years, guys.
I was going to ask a question specifically about the last episode. I wanted to know what it's like for you, in a way, I guess, being responsible for introducing characters to the audience. You did it with Selyse, and you did it with Shireen.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, Selyse and Shireen are a very interesting. The sort of the way they evolved into even being on the show is actually speaks to a lot of what we were just talking about in terms of, you know, in season two, we, for a few reasons, budgetary and just storytelling, we wanted the focus of season two in terms of Stannis to be Stannis in the middle, Melisandre on one side, Davos on the other, and that very kind of clean three, you know, triangle essentially. Now in the book, Selyse right off the bat is making a lot of the same arguments Melisandre is making in those scenes, and is with Melisandre making those arguments. And we thought it would just be more powerful and give the character of Melisandre more agency if it was really just her in those scenes, as opposed to Selyse and Melisandre versus Davos, if that makes sense. At the same time, he still had to be married because it was important to the fact that, especially since we decided we were going to dramatize the conception of the shadow baby and the choices which, you know, obviously happens off the page in the book and is dealt with rather ambiguously in the book. We thought, well, okay, Selyse, well, she exists, but she's not on screen. How do you justify that? Well, okay, he shut her away in a tower. So then when season three came along, we realized that would be able to bring Selyse and Shireen to the story, deal with the circumstances that you've set up, that she's in this tower, and that and we've amped up the idea that he hasn't been able to have any sons and that there were stillborn sons. And so, and then we, the other part of that was when it came to me to introduce Selyse, Selyse is, of course, who brought Melisandre and the Lord of Light's religion to Dragonstone in the first place. And what we wanted to explore, what might make somebody turn to a religion that's so out of left field. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the grief, the huge grief that one might have of losing children, might cause someone to turn to a more extreme, if you will, faith base, is what led us to the idea that she's really consumed with this grief of these boys that she lost. And again, none of that's really in the book. I mean, she's much more of a political figure in the book. That's not to say she won't become a political figure in the future. There's certainly room for that. It speaks to what you talked about a few minutes ago, that since we know kind of the ultimate arc of the books, there's, you know, we can get the characters back into that if need be, but for now, the idea is that she and Stannis have this very estranged relationship, and she is consumed by the grief and guilt of these lost sons, and defines herself wholly by this fanatic devotion to this religion. So the idea was, how do we get all that out in a short scene, you know, in a short introductory scene. And then in terms of Stannis, you know, Stannis isn't a POV character in the book. So we mainly only see him through the eyes of Davos, but I think we only see him through the eyes of Davos, in the second and third book. So the challenge there was, he also doesn't have a lot of chapters really. And, you know, we're splitting book three more or less into two seasons. So we had to come up with an emotional arc for the character in the television series and for Stephen to play. So we amped up what is again alluded to in the book, that he's sort of reeling from his defeat in the Blackwater and depending on Melisandre more than ever. Mm. So this sort of physical connection that he has to her, and it goes beyond just beyond sexual. I think it's this power that she has, this indefinable power that the Lord of Light or whoever is, you know.
He wants to win, basically, and he sees her as a means to that.
He does, but I think he's also, you know, once he saw that, whatever he saw in the flames at the end of season two, he really kind of firmly, if he was on the fence before, he's really kind of, you know, addicted to her now in the beginning of this season. And since we've also contrived another plot line, which takes her away from Dragonstone for a little bit, the idea was, well, okay, if he's essentially going through a kind of withdrawal, and as he's going through this withdrawal, he's left alone, Davos is in the prison and Melisandre's gone for a while, it would be the perfect time for him to then go and try to connect with the family that he doesn't see very much. And that was our way into introducing Selyse and Shireen. So again, none of this is actually in the book. It's all based on clues and hints and things from the book, but it also can easily dovetail back into the events of the book. So that's one example of kind of, and you know, some purists might object to that, but I don't know what to tell you. That's that's what we decided to do.
Your episode Kissed by Fire and this religion with the Lord of Light, it takes a different form because you're saying like Selyse is kind of fanatical and Melisandre is nothing if not fanatical about this Lord of Light. But we also meet Thoros of Myr, who
absolutely.
And Beric Dondarrion is being brought back to life, not once, not twice, not, you know, thrice. I can keep going. Like six times, you know.
Later.
It's a big Lord of Light episode. It's a big kind of, what's cool about the Beric Dondarrion subplot in Thoros of Myr is it's the first time that you see, you see the Lord of Light coming into a different plot line. And you really start to get an idea, oh, okay, this is a force in the world. This is, you know, Melisandre isn't just, you know, whether or not you believe he's a god that's actually, you know, what the source of this power is, the power exists and it exists elsewhere too.
Well, yes, and not just with crazy people wielding.
And also, I don't necessarily think with Selyse, I don't think she's crazy. Like, I don't even think she's crazy for putting those babies in the jars. What that was actually based on was something that I read about a mother who had her stillborn fetus encased in bronze and kept on her mantle. Wow. Again, that's not quote unquote normal behavior, but I don't
know.
No. It's expression of extreme
part of the
grief
process.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really all it was based on. It was just meant to be sort of a visual, you know, representation of that. But I don't think she's crazy. I don't even think Melisandre's crazy. I think they just are fervent believers, you know?
I think that's fair to say, but I guess what I was trying to say is also with Miri Mazdur in the previous seasons too, you know, I thought certain things like even the Shadow Baby could have been maybe a trick of the light until it killed Renly. But this time being brought back to life, physically brought back to life, to see this god that rewards or this power that rewards and can actually return life, that changed the game. And I don't think in any small way.
But yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, the episode was a huge Lord of Light episode, which was a lot of fun to play with. And it was great because you begin the episode with him, with Thoros, you know, intoning and giving this prayer to the Lord of Light. And then you come in on Selyse, you know, doing a riff on the same prayer and you think, oh, okay, there's this, you know, this sort of binding thing. The idea of magic and how it manifests itself, you know, George is brilliantly vague about it. And it's not just the Lord and it's not just the Lord of Light that brings it about. I mean, you've got whatever these powers that Jojen and Bran are experiencing, you know, and whether or not it's all connected to one huge thing, I have no idea. It could be, or it could be a specific thing. It could be, you know, he's been very good at keeping that kind of vague. But the important thing when you're writing it, and the very important thing when we're working with directors and the actors on those scenes, is that it's treated very seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, that this kind of magic has been on the periphery of this world for many years, and it's now coming back. In all of these storylines, it's coming back, having been dormant, whether it's dragons.
Grumpkins.
Coming back into the world. Grumpkins or snarks.
Snarks.
Are they going to find Hogwarts? Is that what's going to happen?
It's like that. Did you guys see that Patton Oswalt thing where he's connecting the Marvel universe with Star Wars?
That was brilliant.
Yeah, this is all Middle Earth and Hogwarts. God. Converging.
That's what we thought. There you go.
Dumbledore, Gandalf.
Podcast is going to get very interesting. Yeah,
right. But that's the idea, is that these fantastical elements, whether it's the White Walkers in the North or the site, which is called the Green Site in the books, that Jojen and Bran have, or the dragons in the East, or the Lord of Light manifesting its powers, it's all happening all at the same time, and I'm sure that's not a coincidence.
The change in season.
And the changing in seasons, of course. Yeah. And so but what's great about that is it's creeping in. And at heart, the show is still about these very human, you know, emotions and family dynamics, and even the more fantastical characters, the trick is finding the humanity in them. And you know, Melisandre is a really hard character to write because she could easily be kind of a one note sorcerer kind of character. So it's finding those little cracks where she isn't so sure what's going on, and where she doesn't count on something happening, like at the end of last season, you know, when Blackwater was a huge disaster, and there's a great shot that comes in of Carice kind of, you know, you can see that she's really been thrown for a loop, like, okay, well, this isn't going the way I thought it was. Why isn't it going that way? You know, so that's a lot of fun to play. And that's explored more this season with her, for sure.
I just think it's great, though, how you laid the groundwork. I think, you know, when you talk about Melisandre, it was the whole Lord of Light thing kind of laying the groundwork for Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion. And now, yeah, like Eric was talking about before, the whole concept of really bringing somebody back to life could be laying the groundwork for things that happen in the future.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All I can really say.
Dot.
I can't help but to see this thing on an astrophysical level when I see the seasons. I go right to science, and I'm like, well, this must be a really strange solar system that they live in.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what moons are throwing the rotation.
No, I mean,
have such long winters.
Of course, no. I mean, and what's great about George is he's not the kind of guy to throw these things out without kind of knowing the answer. So that's
right.
It's nice to know that we're working on something where all this stuff actually is going to pay off. As we talked about before, and he's made us privy to a lot of it. I think there's still some stuff he's keeping close to his chest, but it was a fun episode to write, and to be able to kind of dip into those fantastical elements, and try to ground them in something real. That's always the key. And then in terms of Shireen, because we talk about Shireen, what I love about Shireen is she's got this pretty awful life. And again, it's arguably a little more awful in the show than in the book. Because in the book, she's not
locked up.
She's not locked up. She's not really locked up in this either. She's just not, you know,
hanging out.
She's just not really invited to the party much.
Right.
And her mother, currently in the show, the mom and daughter relationship is not a good one, and not a nurturing one. She's not. She sees her as sort of a living symbol of her own failure to produce sons. That's not in the book. That was introduced just to create another layer of tension for the family in those family scenes. So that's something that's kind of interesting to play. But what I love about the Shireen of our show is, and Carrie's performance, is that she's chooses to still be good and generous to the, you know, she sees in Davos someone that she can help, and she helps him. You know, I
That's
love
a
that
great change too from the companion she had in the book. Patchface.
Well, yeah, Patchface. Yeah, I gave a little nod to Patchface with that, with her. I gave his ravings to her. You know, in the book, he's in the book, he's hopping around. You know, there's always someone under the sea. Oh, which I loved, and I actually wrote a version of the scene that had Patchface in it, and it just wouldn't have worked. It was tricky enough to have to introduce his wife and daughter and deal with Stannis to have a jester bouncing up and down raving. I would have liked to have made it work, but
well, to turn that into a song too, because the show's been running a little high on songs lately too. So I mean, we love The Bear and the Maiden Fair, but to see that also got a song treatment when it was, you know, originally ranting is very interesting.
I mean, and it works on, you know, there's two ways you can look at it. It can either just be a demented children's song that she knows, or it could be the Patchface is off screen and she's singing something she hears him sing every day, and we just aren't seeing Patchface. You know, you can take it however you want. But one thing it doesn't mean, I think some people are worried that Shireen is crazy. She's not. She's just singing a song. it's a demented song, but she.
You're not crazy, Selena.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah,
as soon as I heard that line, and I mentioned this on our Monday episode too, the birds have scales. I was thinking of dragons immediately.
Sure.
I was like, dragons.
Well, if you listen to the imagery, it's all imagery that connects with various plot lines of the show. The shadows come to dance. I think there's a little reference to the walkers in there, and you know, that's based on bits. Again, it's based on Patchface's ravings and a couple of the lines I sort of came up with myself, but you know, it was fun to do. And then the guys had the idea to have the whole song over the credits at the end, which was really fun. So, and Carrie Ingram is, you know, a Olivier Award-winning musical theater actress for Matilda, so
she was able to. Of course, yes,
So she
come
was
on,
able.
Selena.
She was able to sell the song very well.
Get in the chokey, all right?
But that was fun. That having her be the one that teaches Davos to read was a neat, and again, another way to sort of compress the storylines. You know, in the book, Davos does teach himself to read with a maester that lives at Dragonstone. So we do that a lot where we kind of combine characters or give certain story responsibilities to certain characters for, you know, all kinds of reasons, economy of storytelling, but also, you know, again, this idea that they're both being kind of mistreated by Stannis right now and they're seeking solace in each other, you know, and yet they both still believe in Stannis and still love Stannis, which is something, you know.
No, I loved what Davos had to do in this episode. That was great with, you know, his scenes with the girl.
That was one of my favorite scenes for sure.
As a fan of the books, like that's one of the, I mean, I'm not one of those people that will rave and complain about the changes, but this was one of the changes that I really, really loved, because it just, it gives Davos something to do. It gives Shireen, I can Shireen. Never tell these two apart, Shireen something to do as well, and it's just brilliant.
That's great.
Wonderful.
I'm glad you liked it.
So obviously there's a lot of pressure moving this text onto screen. And we had someone write in on Twitter. Let me find it. Well, first we have some praise from Jilly Bean. She says, love, love, love for Brian C. Should have been Ryan C. Continually writes my favorite episodes each season.
Well, that's right. That's very nice.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to follow it up with a different one. Dan Frost says, please ask him, how does he deal with crazy fans criticizing every writing decision he makes?
Well, I didn't deal with it very well last year when I quit Twitter in a huff and made this snarky comment that I regretted 5 minutes later.
We were trying to plug you in the goo Twitter, and I was like, where the hell did his Twitter
go? I was on Twitter last year, and you know, look, 95% of the comments I got were lovely, you know, but the other 5% were, and I don't mind the criticism, but some of them were just mean. You know, and I didn't have the, I'll fully admit, I didn't have the stomach for it. There was this one day where I was just getting laid into from all sides because of a line that Yara Greyjoy had that I didn't even write. It was a long day and I was having other things going on, but I said, you know what, I'm done. No more Game of Thrones writers on Twitter or something. And I left, and that was, you know, childish. But, you know, look, I'm thrilled to be working on something and working with a set of characters and a story that, you know, and people are so passionate about. There's no way you can please everybody. And there are certain character traits that certain fans hold very dear. And if you alter them for whatever reason, they are upset with you. And, you know, we always have our reasons for doing so. And those reasons probably wouldn't satisfy everybody. And, you know, I was too mindful of the message boards and the every little tweet the last year. And it got to the point where it was actually interfering with me doing my job well. So,
right.
So I still check in at Winter's Coming, you know, every once in a while. But otherwise I sort of kind of took a step back. Mm-hmm. But having said that, most people have been absolutely lovely.
Before you move on too far,
yes.
Please allow me to link you up to last week's ratings. Okay. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's nice. Thanks.
The key is for people though, if George R. R. Martin is comfortable enough to entrust you all with the material and to let you do what you guys do, which you do really, really well, I don't think people can have cause for complaint.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, look, anybody can complain if they want, but yes, the only book purist I really care about is what George thinks, and George is happy. Mm. So
that's fair.
You know, George sent a very nice note last week, which I treasured, you know, after Kiss by Fire aired and we send him the outline and he weighs in on changes that we might have made and we have a dialogue with him about it. But he gets it. He gets that there's show canon and then there's book canon, you know.
Well, speaking of one of these changes, because obviously, I mean, I know a lot of people, whether or not they're being, you know, online-y about it or not.
Perfect.
I'm sure they have there's a lot of people who've asked us to ask you this, including John Martin Ranises on hypeable.com, which is the scene with Arya and Gendry, because obviously this is one of the areas.
This was a huge,
what did it mean what he said to her and all of these things.
The big question seems to be whether or not his use of Milady had anything to do with which.
The tumblers are all about that.
Yeah, which I don't even, you know, and I don't understand. He's what he's talking about is their class difference, that, you know, we wouldn't be a family because if I came to Winterfell with you, I'd be one of your servants and you'd be Lady Stark. Mm-hmm. That's what he means by Milady. It's not like he's saying, No, baby, you'd be my lady. I'd treat you right. I mean,
I don't think anybody thought that.
I think that's what some people thought.
I'm streaming the episode on 56K over HBO Go, and that's exactly what it sounded like he said.
Yeah,
so I was like, what is this?
No, baby, you'd be my lady.
Be my lady, girlfriend.
Oh, I wish he'd said it like that now.
outtakes.
I mean, I don't know that it's, I suppose.
That's so funny.
I mean, to be honest, I'd have to look at the original scene
and
how I adapted it. But I mean, he's a little older because Joe's older. So there's there's more of an age difference.
Well, in terms of the story, though, and I know we can't really get too much into this, but it's fairly common knowledge that obviously Joe Dempsey's story isn't done
in the
show.
Yes, that's true. It's not. I can't really say much more than that. But
no,
I guess that I'm wondering.
Well, thanks for coming on. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to ask anymore, but I really want to. But okay, I'll leave it.
But in terms of that scene, I mean, maybe it didn't happen like right after the trial by combat in the book. But a version of that scene definitely exists in the book. Mm-hmm. I think we might have made it a little more overtly emotional. I don't think she ever says "I could be your family" in the book.
That was so nice though. That worked really well, didn't it? Because it's just another person leaving her.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the idea, was that she's, you know, this is the only family she's got, and whether it's a love she has for him that is romantic or whether it's a love she has for him because he represents, you know, Jon Snow or Robb Stark, you could take that moment either way. And you'd have to ask Maisie how she feels about, I mean, clearly she loves him. Now, what kind of love that is, I think Maisie would be more the person to talk to about that because she's who had to play the scene. But she clearly loves him, and
who wouldn't?
And who wouldn't? I mean, he's a dreamboat. But no, I mean, whether maybe she's not even conscious of the fact that she loves him, and it just kind of. I think the way she played it sort of beautifully. She played it really beautifully, where it kind of almost came out without her really knowing it would come out, you know, that this I could be your family.
That's interesting. One of the things we talked about on Monday's show was, did Gendry kind of fill that Jon Snow role?
Sure. Arya? Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you know. Yeah, I think he filled a lot of roles for her for a while. And you know, she doesn't trust these guys. So the Brotherhood. So she's truly, you know, alone, and so, you know, perhaps that scene was a little more overtly emotional than the book version. And part of that has to do too with the actors. I think, you know, Joe made a really nice choice in the performing of the scene. I think when I wrote it, you'd be and this might be a source of some of the confusion, but when I wrote the line, "You wouldn't be my family, you'd be my lady," it was meant, in my mind, it was more of a sticking it to her kind of line.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And yet he made a lovely choice where it's sort of like he's letting her down easy or trying to explain because he cares for her too, which I thought was beautiful. And not what I had thought when I wrote it, but that's why it's nice when you have the best cast on TV, because they take your words and make them their own, you know.
You made people cry.
Well,
yeah, definitely.
I think too, the mystery of it all, the ambiguity. People love a mystery on the show. We want to talk about these characters long after the show's over. Mm. And I think we're expecting mystery ever since that Podrick scene a few episodes ago, where it was very ambiguous.
Well, that I can tell you, I think is just a bit of fun. I don't think there's much.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, we got questions about.
We
that.
Have an answer
Selena
now.
Selena was really worried.
No, we know.
I think that's just a good old fashioned comic relief there.
Oh, that's so funny.
whether or not you found it funny is up
that's
to you,
awesome.
as any comic relief is. And but I wouldn't read too much more into
Thank
that.
Thank you for clearing that up for us. This has been going on for far too many
weeks on this podcast. The Lord of Light did not come possess Pod and turn him into a. No, I think Pod is just, you know, there. He's just there for the ladies. That's, you know, he's
ladies man.
He's
wow,
a, he's a, an attentive and imaginative lover.
There you go.
But I wanted to just quickly going back to the relationships, or not. I don't want to say relationships in that way, but I think one of the things that struck a chord with so many people about this particular episode is that for a lot of these, I mean, yeah, people like to read romances into them, and people you know, that's great. That's part of reading a story. But I think more than that, one of the things that this episode really did is that it showed that it's possible to trust someone even in this completely messed up world where people just keep dying and betraying each other. Like, we had Arya and Gendry, we had Jaime and Brienne, we had Jon and Ygritte, and whether or not it's
Shireen and Davos.
Or not,
yeah,
Shireen and Davos, exactly. There's just these true friendships that's based on something deeper, and I think that's nice.
Yeah, it was nice. There were a lot of scenes of kind of humanity in the episode and I, you know, kind of just worked out that way. I mean, you know, we block all of this out in the writer's room, and it's sort of like a little puzzle, but we don't, when we're blocking it out, necessarily go, okay, this episode will be about characters finding humanity in each other and trusting each other. It's sometimes these sort of themes kind of just emerge without you even really knowing it. Like episode two of this season was sort of an amazing Power to the Ladies episode, where a lot of the female characters kind of came, and that you know, that was just sort of a happy accident, you know. So
good.
So yes, I in terms of just the fact that they all happened in one episode. So I got a lot of really nice, meaty, humane scenes, and the top of them, of course, being the Jaime and Brienne scene, which is certainly. When I read the books, one of my top, probably my top three, you know, moments, scenes in all of the novels. So when I was assigned the episode and had the opportunity to adapt that scene, I was so thrilled. And I couldn't have been happier with how it turned out. I think, you know, Nikolai delivers, and Gwen too, both of them. But I mean, Emmy award winning kind of performances there. I think they're just, it's an extraordinary piece of acting and directing, and Alex Graves really worked with them very hard on it. And it was a very difficult shoot that night. We went a long time to get that thing right. And shooting in the water was tricky on a technical level, and, you know, dealing with nudity and all of it. I mean, it's a very intimate and raw scene. And really took a toll on the actors emotionally, you know. But it, I think it all comes across on the screen. It's really fun, and I love that relationship. And George's arc that he, you know, concocted for Jamie Lannister is one of the most interesting and fascinating in the whole saga, and continues to be long after this episode is over. But this is the episode where the real kind of turning point happens, I think.
It definitely made me a fan of Jamie up this episode.
Yeah. I mean, and you forget that he pushed a 10-year-old kid out a window.
That's something we talk about a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's funny.
It's an amazing thing. I mean, that's George. I mean,
love is a powerful drug.
Yeah, you know, and with Brienne and Jamie, I mean, it is a love story of sorts, not in any kind of conventional way, but you know, it has all the beats of a classic kind of romantic comedy in a weird way.
Right, Jamie and Brienne in a canoe.
It's a very dark romantic comedy, but I mean, and the scene itself, again, it's not a love scene, but there is a sensuality to the scene because they're, you know, naked and they're in this water, and it's not, again, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, it's it's not at all, but it's but the idea of being sort of burying yourself, you know, and owning who you are, and it was, again, it's a stroke of genius from George to have it occur, you know, in that bath.
Challenge to the listeners: please make a techno song out of that voice clip. Just then.
Yeah,
there's a second one to source from. It's even a little bit different.
Great. Yeah, but yeah. So that was really a fun challenge to adapt. I mean, it was, because it's a very long speech. I mean, it's still the longest speech we've ever had in the show in terms of page count. But it's if you look at the speech in the books, it's a lot longer. So it was a trick to, you know, kind of whittle it down to the essentials and find the, you know, the moments that would work best on screen. And but I think we pulled it off. I think it's a good scene.
Was that your favorite scene to do this episode?
Yeah, it's my favorite scene to do in the whole series.
Oh yeah, I have a feeling this scene will be a lot of people's favorite this season. Oh,
that's nice, thank you. Yeah, I know, it was from beginning to end such a joy. I mean, I had a lot of juicy, pretty much every scene in Kiss by Fire was a really juicy one to work on. I really got lucky. But then, you know, I got lucky with What Does Deborah Never Die Too. That had a lot of great scenes that were fun to do. The Theon stuff, especially. I missed writing for Alfie this year. That was probably my only.
Oh, please don't start Eric up.
I miss seeing Eric. Alfie this year. Yeah.
Well, you see him. He's just seeing him in a different way.
Yeah. It's okay. We'll comfort you later.
Yeah. That scene was a personal favorite, and then I'm very fond of the Dragonstone scenes, only because of what we talked about, the fact that they. And many book fans, I think, probably hate those scenes, but I'm very fond of them because a lot of them were kind of born out of my own imagination and were a problem solver kind of, you know, how do we get these characters into the world that our show has established and what we need to do with Stannis at this point in our version of the story. And I really enjoyed, it's kind of a twisted family.
Especially because he is such an integral character moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, like largely you never get inside his head in the book. It's purely for most of the book, it's from the POV of a character who idolizes him, you know? So it's hard to, and so as such, I think a lot of readers idolize him in a lot of ways. And it's not to say that those traits that those readers love about Stannis won't emerge eventually, but right now we're dealing with a darker side to him.
We did a good job compartmentalizing Dragonstone, I thought, because it flowed nicely. I didn't feel like it was too crazy, the fact that they jumped right to where they were. So.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, it's a trick. You know, it's a tricky balancing act, and we're still playing with how we do it, even as we're writing season four, in terms of how many characters we visit per episode and how much time we spend with each. And you know, we made more of a choice in season three to not feel the need to check in with everybody every episode, which we did that to a degree in seasons one and two, but there's more of that this year. And I think it's better for it. I think spending more time with characters and then maybe not seeing them for one or two episodes, to me, works better.
Sort of moving off that, we had a question on Hypebol from Mikhail, who asks if there... Yeah, it was you under your pseudonym. You're also a girl now.
Clever. Very clever.
This is the female version of you.
Whatever gets my question asked, doesn't
it? Oh, God, I'd like to meet her.
It's whether... Who are your favorite characters to write for, and who are the most difficult?
Oh, that's interesting. It sort of changes. I mean, this year it was definitely Jamie for the reasons we discussed. And I loved doing Theon. I loved doing Theon last year. I always loved doing the kids, writing for the kids.
It's Hodor, isn't it?
Hodor, it's hard. It's hard to actually
to get it in.
Hodor's great because you can just write a Hodor in there if you need something. You know, it's tricky, and I didn't have any scenes for him this year, but it's tricky writing for Bran because so much of Bran in the book is internal, and what's happening to him is not exactly easy to translate on screen. So that's a challenge. I find, and I didn't have any Danny scenes in my episode this year were actually written by David and Dan because they were written originally for 306 and then moved into my script pretty early on in production. So I didn't actually, they're all wonderful scenes. I'm happy to have them in there, but I didn't write them.
What about Rob?
Yeah, Rob's.
Since he's not a point of view character.
Rob, yeah, he's.
A dreamboat, go on.
Man, he's okay to write. Those scenes laid out pretty well. Danny to me is hard to write when I do have to write her. And I can't even really say why, because I love Amelia and I love the character. I just, funnily enough, scenes that I wrote for her in season two got moved out of my episode. I didn't write got so, but that happens. That happens a lot with Dany, especially because her storyline is so removed that often where she's placed in the episodes is a changing thing, you know?
Right. So what you're saying is you have an aversion to dragons naturally.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't want to, I don't want to give the wrong impression here. I mean, I love all the characters, but Danny doesn't come as easy, I guess, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really like the Lannisters. I feel like I write them well. I don't know. It's hard to put into words, to be honest. It's such a kind of internal thing. I
could you please put it in Old Valyrian?
you have to talk to David Peterson about that. I don't know.
All right. Well, he actually asked another question.
Okay.
Your sigil and house words.
Mikhail, the girl?
Oh, she. Excuse me. It's a name. It's Micah. It confused me. Micah asked another question.
My sigil and house words?
Yeah.
I did one when they did that whole do your own sigil thing. I think it was blue eyed and bald or something. Yeah, blue-eyed and bald, and then my sigil was like a bald head and a.
Perfect.
It was a bald. It was a blue smiley face.
That's fantastic. That's kind of Watchmen-y. A
little bit
different.
A little bit, yeah. So that was that. Yeah, blue-eyed and bald. It's pretty straightforward.
What would you name your Valyrian greatsword? Is the follow-up question.
Oh wow,
barber.
right. My Valyrian greatsword. Shaver. Yeah, I feel like I have to come up with something clever, which I can't do. So
razor. Just say razor.
Yeah,
say
right. Razor.
There you go.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Razor is a pretty good name for a sword.
Yeah,
actually.
It's got a little bit of a BSG connection too. It's all tying together really.
The razor.
It does. It's useful for all kinds of tasks.
I can't wait till you guys go to space.
Battle
spoiler
or
alert.
Shaving. Right. Exactly. Oh, I rule nothing
Season
out.
Season 5.
I rule nothing out.
But just that whole Jamie's talking about, what happened with the dragon, the Mad King.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's talking about that, and it's told then and there, and it's the long scene. It's a great scene for Nikolai. But there were other moments in the series where we thought, because we've read, some of the books as well, are flashbacks completely out of the question for the show?
Right now, the rule is no flashbacks. That was something we set pretty early for practical reasons, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Because with this show, it could easily be a crutch, and we have enough characters as it is to cast an entire cast of prequel characters.
Yeah, completely agree.
It would be, I think, very jarring, and I think you'd lose a lot of kind of great reflective moments that, our actors are capable of selling those kind of speeches that take you back. That's not to say, I rule nothing out for the future. I'm not, I, you know, the relationship of these characters to the past is very important. So there might be devices we use in the future that we haven't used yet, but that's me just guessing. We have no plans to use flashbacks anytime soon. And dreams too. I mean, you know, generally as a rule, the only person that has dreams is Bran. You know, dreams are a big part of the book too for a lot of characters. And again, that's for a TV show. I think that could be a crutch.
They're very heavy sleepers,
right? you know, I think Sansa had one dream that sort of flashed to the mob before her period came. That was the one time I think that we broke the only Bran has dreams rule.
Yeah, there's a lot more trouble incorporating that episodically, I'd imagine.
Mm. It would kind of just be a mess, you know.
Right.
But you never know. I mean, we're not done yet, and there may be a storyline or an occasion that calls for it, but there aren't any plans to right now.
Yeah, I just like how you've kept it all current, you know, how everybody's currently telling the story of what happened, and you guys seem to...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the show is more firmly rooted in the present, and the books have the luxury of being able to sort of be about all of it. You know? Mm-hmm. I think the show sort of has to deal first and foremost with what's happening now. Mm-hmm. And of course, the past informs it, and there are mysteries and secrets and things, events in the past that inform what's happening in the present. And we will visit those when it most affects the present, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know,
well, Heather asked on Hypeable, whether or not you guys were looking for filming locations other than just Northern Ireland, Iceland, Morocco, and Croatia. And that kind of leads me to my next question. What places will you ride in order to travel to an exotic location?
Oh, that's funny.
They're lost. They're like, we got to shoot in Hawaii forever. No. So buy houses, everyone.
I know. Why can't we do that? So far, I don't think we're expanding our current crop of countries, but you never know.
That's funny just to say that again.
I know.
Our current crop of countries.
It's a challenge because, you know, George has created an entire planet here with all kinds of different climates. And it's amazing how much Northern Ireland, even without the other countries, can double for so many things. I mean, there's a lot of Essos. A lot of the Essos scenes from season one were actually shot in Northern Ireland, believe it or not. So the countries we've used so far have been amazing. And I don't think we're adding any new ones to the list, at least not next season, but you never know. I mean, we got a few more to go, so.
You guys coming to New York anytime soon?
You know, yeah, New York City. Okay. There was that promo where the Raven.
The Raven, yes. Flying we all like that.
You know, hey, you never know. I mean, if time travel comes into the show.
Season 6.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, right.
After the space travel, they go into TARDIS
The problem, though, is that a dragon flying around New York probably wouldn't distract anybody.
Well, that's the thing.
It would not be out of the norm.
They'd just be like, oh, look at that. Yeah, right.
What are they advertising
the
now?
Dragon.
Exactly. I had one other question. Mm-hmm. Varys and Baelish. When I say those names, what comes to mind for you?
Oh, verbal sparring.
Whispering slippers.
Whispering, yeah. Spy versus spy. Yeah, that's something that, you know, there's another plot line that was largely invented for the show, and mainly to give a little more for them to do. The first book and the first season, Littlefinger and Varys have quite a lot to do. And while they pop up in important places in the next couple books, they don't drive as many plot lines. So we sort of folded them into a great example of this season is the marriage plot, the Sansa Tyrell. You know,
union
and the Sansa with Tyrion and all that stuff, which is from the book, but we extended it and complicated it a bit more by weaving the Varys Littlefinger rivalry into it, which I think has been a lot of fun. And those, you know, that kind of all came out of that first scene that David and Dan wrote for Conleth and Aiden in the fifth episode of the first season. And it sort of just spiraled from there. And it's been a lot of fun to write that storyline. And those two actors are just incredible. And Conleth is a genius. I love writing. Actually, Varys.
Him and Tyrion together are gold.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that relationship. And we beefed it up a little bit more, I think, for the show. And yeah, it's an amazing relationship.
Would you consider them ultimate players?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, Mike is very, very about this Tyrion Varys sort of playing from the shadows and, orchestrating everything like puppets.
In terms of Tyrion, I mean, Varys sees in Tyrion a formidable player and a real mind and someone to he wants to work with and B wants to make sure, you know, he's on his side of the coin, you know. And I love that relationship in season two where he's like, you know, this is a hand of the king I can finally work with. I love that stuff. But they're definitely ultimate players: Littlefinger, Tyrion, Varys, and then of course you've got Tywin, who's sort of the master of the game right now, and never more so evident than in the last scene of last week's episode.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Which was the other highlight of the episode was by far.
All right, listen, kids, this is who you're going to marry.
Oh yeah,
this is who you're going to marry. Yeah,
we called it a Lannister family Christmas. Is what we. you know, and again,
everyone gets a present.
And again, that's a scene in the book, but it's just slightly different. In the book, it's a small council scene, so you had other characters present, and we decided to make it an intimate kind of family scene and really just be about the three of them and and switch the order we start the scene with Tyrion hearing about his engagement and then turning the table on Cersei, which I think it's the reverse in the book.
I think that was a great mechanic because I feel like their reactions would have been a little less natural with an audience. So just having the family.
Yeah, there. That was the idea. Yeah. Was that it's really about his and about him, Tywin, kind of dealing with the thing about it, the two things that he's most ashamed of in terms of his children, which is Tyrion's first marriage and Cersei's alleged affair with her brother, whether or not he believes it to be true or not. And I'm not sure what the answer is. He's certainly aware that it's out there and he doesn't like it. So he, you know, says, you know, we're going to put an end to these disgusting rumors about you, which I think is a line from the book. But, and the big difference there is that she's marrying or engaged to be married to Loras as opposed to Willis Tyrell. And that was just a case of simplifying the story and using the Tyrell that is actually on the show and the audience actually knows, as opposed to an unseen Tyrell that is off screen. it's just first telling the story for TV. It just seemed to make the most sense, you know.
I mean, that's what Sansa wanted anyway.
Yeah, and it ties back to that first scene she has with Sansa in the first. She has with Loras when he gives her the rose in that first season. So,
right. Oh, that's good.
Poor Sansa. No, I mean, it really, you know, I love Sophie is another one of my favorite actors in the show. And she, this season is just in many ways more devastating than some of the others because she really thinks that finally this chivalry that she's been dreaming about and hearing about her whole life, she's finally meeting someone in Margaery who she thinks is the embodiment of that life that she's always wanted. And she doesn't know it yet, but it's not going to happen.
That's so tragic for Sansa. I mean, characters are going through these horrible things, but Sansa's story is horrible too because she really thinks she's saved.
Sansa is an amazing character, and I think one of the more, in her own way, one of the more heroic characters in the whole story, because she endures this terrible psychological torture basically. Sometimes
she's in the lion's den,
you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, literally.
You know, so the way that plays out over the course of the season is really great. And Sophie did an amazing job, as does all our cast.
What would you consider to be the own of your episode?
Ooh. The own?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Orion's episode. Sorry.
Orion's episode. Right. I should ask Ryan. He's in the next room. You know what it is? It's when someone mentions my episode, the image that pops in my head is the close-up of Nikolai when he says, "By what right does the wolf judge the lion?" So it must be that moment.
There you go.
It must be that moment. That was the take where we all were in the tent, looking at watching it, and just kind of looking at each other like, "Oh my god, this is, you know, something we haven't really seen yet on the show." And
we did it.
It's so raw and powerful. Yeah, and it's one of the great lines from the book. And I think that must be it.
Fantastic.
Well, it was really fun talking to you guys, and I appreciate all the kind words. It's very encouraging as I try to write season four.
do you know which episode you're writing out of season four?
Yeah, I can't say which ones, but I am writing two. I am writing two episodes. Yeah.
That's cool. Exciting.
That's great, man.
For the first time, so I'm excited about that.
Wow.
I can't really say where they're placed, but mm-hmm. But it's It's a lot of fun, and I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'll say it right now. So I better go watch some Disney movies and get some inspiration.
We want twice as much music in the next two, Brian.
Oh, don't you worry. There's going to be singing mermaids and everything.
Singing dragons, please.
Singing
please.
Dragons, you know.
Lamp, dragon mermaids.
Rubbing, oh, up, rubbing of lamps and genies and everything. I'm going to go all out. Squirrels.
Dancing eunuchs. Dancing eunuchs,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Oh, get some camels in there, too.
I'll show you.
If you have a suggestion for Ryan's episodes next season, feel free to send us an email.
GameOfBones.com.
What animals?
I'll let Ryan know, and maybe you know. since you guys were so happy about the episode, I might just even feed Ryan tonight and let him go outside. Good. Let him go outside for some air.
Should there be camels?
I feel like he's
should
earned
there be
it.
Polar bears?
Yes, I'll ask him.
So we sourced a bunch of the questions you heard tonight. We sourced some of them from Twitter, mm-hmm. and even though Brian is not on Twitter for very good reasons, you can always send us your negative feedback for him, and right. they will be promptly deleted. So you can tweet us.
I love our you, Twitter. I love you, Twitter fans. I love most of you.
Don't we can? We'll be filtering your tweets. Yes,
sorry,
you can tweet
I'm spineless.
Tweet us at Game of Owns on Twitter. It's Game of Owns. Twitter.com/Game of Owns. Our Facebook is the same. Facebook.com/Game of Owns. And if you have anything a little longer format to send us, you can wet us, bet us, and put a baby in us via email.
Nice. Please.
Via email.
It's only possible for one of us.
So I'm okay really with this. Happy. Hello.
At contact@gameofbones.com.
Really disturbing.
I hope you get a hell of a lot of camels for me. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
At least a dozen.
And of course, you can rate and review us on iTunes, which is most likely where you downloaded this episode. We appreciate you giving us 5 stars because let's face it, it's the month of May. Nothing less is acceptable. And, you know, I thought in tradition of the guests on our show threatening our listeners, we had one from Chris, we had one from Kat, now Brian or Ryan or whoever. Feel free. I mean, the listeners, sometimes they need to be intimidated a little bit in order to make sure that they give us the proper rating on iTunes.
Winter is coming for all who do not...
Uh-oh.
Give 5 stars.
Oh no.
To this podcast.
Oh my god.
Winter is coming, and not only that, but on the other side of the coin,
uh-oh.
From the ashes of old Valyria.
Oh god.
The fiery dragon dragon's breath that from which the dragons were born. So it's basically either way you're in terrible trouble.
I think it's pretty much the ultimate, you this threat. The ultimate yeah. threat.
If you
like,
don't.
The world will just end in fire
yeah,
and
pretty
ice.
Pretty much.
There you go.
Do the right thing. Do the right thing, folks.
The thing is, he knows what's coming with winter.
Well, that's the thing.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh,
I know in and excruciating fire. Detail what happens. So
now everybody go and overanalyze everything
yeah, right.
Ryan just said. Because there's secrets in
I'm
there.
I'm sure
so
there were clues in
listen
there.
Listen to the wise words of Sir Brian, who has tossed the strongest gauntlet thus
thanks,
far
guys.
On Game of Owns.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Selena Wilkin, not Selise, which annoys me because she's crazy. And so what's my name?
No,
okay,
she's just green.
Okay, that's better.
I'm Zach Louie. It's not very hard to confuse.
I'm Sam.
There he is.
That's pretty good.
And I'm Ryan, the real writer of
whoa.
Oh. Ryan, go back to your go back
Ryan
to your room.
Ryan is here.
See you guys on Monday.
God, did they not see the one with the horse?
I don't think a literal turd. I think.
Sorry, I don't remember any shit. I think I remember.
I think they were referring to the episode. As they said,
God.
It was not. They said Game of Thrones is not. a Disney Saturday morning special, Brian.
And here you thought it was. How wrong you were.
I mean,
don't they know that you make every decision? Okay.
They're lucky they didn't see the original cut with the song. I mean, when Arya sings the song, I, you know.